This is the OpenJDK Podcast, Season 1, Episode 1. My name is Dalibor Topic and I'm your host for this episode. The general idea behind all this is that I go out and interview different members of the OpenJDK community about the work they do and give you a chance to figure out what's going on with the project. And what better way to start off the whole thing than to go out and actually interview Thomas Fitzsimmons, who works on the IST project, which is very closely related to OpenJDK. In fact, so closely that a lot of people sometimes confuse one for the other. When I was at Java 1 this year, I took a chance to stick a microphone in front of Tom and interview him about the project and how it all works.
My name is Dalibor Topic and I'm sitting here at Java 1 with my co-speaker in yesterday's sessions on growing open source developer communities, Tom Fitzsimmons, who's working for Red Hat and is hacking, among other things, on the IST project. So, hi, Tom.
Hi, Dalibor.
Welcome. And, you know, why don't you tell us more about yourself and where you come from and what you're doing in all this open source Java thing?
Sure. So my name is Tom Fitzsimmons. I'm on the Red Hat open source Java team, and I'm based in Toronto. And I've been working on the IST project. Our main focus over the past year has been reacting to Sun's release of the OpenJDK code base at last year's Java 1. The main work area that we've been using is the IST project. So you can think of it as a build harness around the OpenJDK sources. It adds a wrapper of the GNU auto tools around the OpenJDK tarball releases, among other things. So it was initially founded to get OpenJDK into Fedora as fast as possible. When OpenJDK was initially released, there were about 4% of the code base was encumbered, and the encumbrances were important areas that we felt needed to be addressed before a release could go into Fedora. We needed to replace these 4% encumbrances. So we were able to take a lot of the code for replacements and just drop it in and integrate it, code from GNU ClassPath project. And so GNU ClassPath is an effort by the Free Software Foundation to create a free implementation of the Java class libraries. And so this effort is almost as old as Java itself. The Red Hat open source Java team had been working on GNU ClassPath before the release of OpenJDK. Now, when OpenJDK was released, Sun chose the same license that we had been working on GNU ClassPath under. And as a result, basically they killed the ClassPath project in the best possible way, because we couldn't have hoped for a better result. I mean, objectively, that's true. It was a little bittersweet to see all our code, you know, replaced, stomped on by the reference implementation. At the same time, it's been a really great thing. It's a tremendous contribution to the free software community from Sun.
The interesting part of all this for me is that you were able to actually reuse ClassPath for the encumbrances. But as far as I saw, Sun kept releasing more of these encumbrances over time.
Our goal was to get OpenJDK into Fedora as fast as possible. And the fastest way to do that, we knew Sun was working on replacements, but we weren't sure what the scheduling was, when they planned to release them. So the fastest route to replacing them for us was to just take existing components from GNU ClassPath. I mean, we had expertise in these areas, and so we were able to drop in the code fairly, a lot easier than I thought, actually. So it was surprisingly easy.
And that went into Fedora 8.
That's right. So the result of that was that we shipped IST packages based on the OpenJDK 7 branch in Fedora 8, and that was in November 2007.
So you were the first distribution to ship IST-based packages, I guess.
Yeah, that's
excellent.
Right. Yeah.
Did the patch sit decrease over time, or did it increase? What happened with the patches? Did your patches go upstream?
A little bit of both. Part of the IST project has been to host patches that integrate OpenJDK into Linux distributions. And it's kind of a testing ground. Eventually, we hope to submit all of these patches upstream. But in the interim, it's nice to have a place to work to collaborate with other Linux distributions in this integration effort. We do have a set of patches for this purpose that we're maintaining. Some of them have gone upstream, but more of them haven't yet. So we're still kind of working, feeling out the process for getting things upstream. But yeah, some of our patches have gone upstream.
So the process is beginning to work for you?
Yeah, it's coming, yep.
That's good to know. And another thing I was wondering about, of course, is the current releases of OpenJDK in Fedora 9, which is coming next week, if all goes well, I guess. They're all based on OpenJDK 6. So how did that work out?
Okay, so after the release of Fedora 8, forget the exact date, maybe sometime in February, Sun released OpenJDK 6, which is a stable branch based on OpenJDK 7 with kind of new features reverted, basically. OpenJDK 6 aims to be a Java 6 compliant JDK. And so we wanted to provide that to Fedora users instead of the OpenJDK 7 based ICE-T packages, just because OpenJDK 7 is still really in development, under heavy development. So we wanted to provide something more stable for Fedora users. And so as part of that, we were able to rename the packages from ICE-T to OpenJDK. This was another issue that motivated us to start ICE-T was naming. So OpenJDK is a trademark of Sun. And at the time of the initial release, there was no way for external entities to use that name without violating Sun's trademark. So we decided on ICE-T because it's a catchy name and it's a caffeinated beverage, and we can celebrate releases with Long Island iced teas. And but since Fedora 8, Sun has provided a trademark license, which is kind of an interesting legal experiment, I guess. It may be the first license like that.
Yeah, I think it's the first trademark license that follows the code where it goes.
Right. So that's very interesting, and that's been great for us because, I mean, all along we've wanted to call the packages OpenJDK because it's just the most honest name. I mean, like ICE-T might comprise 0.1% of the code that actually ends up in the packages, maybe even less than that. So it's the proper thing to do to call it OpenJDK in the release strings and release notes and version strings and the packages themselves.
Speaking of licenses, Red Hat signed the OpenJDK TCK license agreement, which means Red Hat has been doing some of the TCK work in the past half a year. How is that coming along?
It's coming along really well. So we're getting close. It's been a really big effort. I mean, the TCK is a very large test framework, and it's tricky to deploy. So there's been a lot of back and forth between Red Hat and Sun engineers, and we've for a while now we've had the TCK running such that it produces reproducible results, and so we're just working on fixing the blockers now.
And I hope the blockers are dwindling.
They are dwindling, yes.
But there are other components that aren't really part of the core SE platform that are still important for users, deployment components. One of the interesting features that a lot of users crave on GNU Linux is a 64-bit plugin. And I've heard rumors that you were the guy who wrote TCJ web plugin that's now shipping with Fedora. Could you tell us more about that one?
Sure. So yeah, that was one nice thing about Fedora 8 is for the first time we were able to ship a Java plugin on x86 64, and users were very happy about that. So there were lots of vocal users on the mailing list saying, "This rocks! This is awesome! Finally, a 64-bit plugin." So that's historically been quite a problem because even proprietary JDKs like Sun's didn't provide a plugin on 64-bit architectures. So GCJ Web Plugin is the the component that sits in the Firefox process itself, but it actually talks to an external JVM process. And so GCJ web plugin had been integrated into GNU ClassPath, but I was able to hack it a little bit so that, and also patch Sun's applet viewer so that we could then use Sun's applet viewer to actually run the applets and embed the window in GCJ web plugin in the Firefox process. And that was great because one of the big missing things from GNU ClassPath was a security framework. And so we couldn't run untrusted applets safely. So when OpenJDK was released, it did provide this full security implementation. And so that's why in previous releases of Fedora, GCJ web plugin was an optional component that you could, you know, manually add if you knew where to look. But as of Fedora 8, we made it default, and that's because we were able to use the OpenJDK's security framework to safely run untrusted applets. So that was a nice combination of two things. You know, OpenJDK had the security framework, ClassPath had the plugin, and we were able to combine the two in Ice-T.
Yeah, that just sounds like free software at its best.
That's right. Yeah, it was. It was fairly straightforward to do. I did it like kind of in a weekend. I was up at the cottage and just started hacking on it. So
you have a hacking cottage.
Yeah, right.
Does Gary have a hacking cottage too? Because he's been quite busy on the Zero interpreter and now on the JIT. Can you tell us more about that one?
Sure. So, like I say, Ice-T's goal is to integrate OpenJDK as much as possible into Fedora. Fedora supports more machine architectures than just x86 and x86-64, which OpenJDK provides JITs for. So we wanted to address this issue, and the Ice-T project became a good workplace for this effort as well. And so one of our team members, Gary Benson, undertook this effort. The first step was he wrote interpreted ports to PowerPC and PowerPC 64 architectures. So Sun has this thing called the C++ interpreter, and as I understand it, it allows you to port the Hotspot's interpreter to new machine architectures with much less code than is required of a full JIT port. So that was the first step, and he got that working. I was amazed actually how fast he got that working, but well, it's not fast. It's actually very slow. I'll talk about that later, but he was able to do it fairly quickly. So and then about a month after he had that working, he had generalized his approach to use a library called libffi in GCC, and this essentially means that you can now build Ice-T and OpenJDK on any machine architecture to which GCC has been ported. And GCC has been ported to a lot of architectures. Now, in practice, we've tested, I believe people have it working on Spark, IA64, so Itanium. And there's efforts to build it on ARM. We're not sure how far those have progressed, because ARM is obviously
still compiling.
It's still compiling, exactly. So that brings up the point. So with this interpreter, we've traded off performance for portability. So the interpreter is very slow, extremely slow compared to JITs. And that doesn't make it entirely useless for us, for our purposes, because for various reasons, we really want to maintain the same set of packages on all Fedora supported architectures, and Gary's work allows us to do that. Though it's slow, we can still build packages on it.
It does also seem to solve the bootstrapping problem if you want to, for example, start working on a JIT for a different platform.
That's exactly it. Yeah, so it works out all our packaging processes so that everything's in place, so that when we do develop some sort of JIT framework, we should be able to just drop it in and see a performance improvement without any process changes. So and that's what Gary's looking at now is so there's a project called the low level virtual machine, which is kind of a both ahead of time and JIT compilation framework. And he's looking at creating an LLVM backend to Hotspot that would allow hopefully much faster ports than the current interpreter.
That sounds
and in a generic way, right?
Yeah. So that sounds great. So I'm looking forward to those patches. Hitting the OpenJDK tree.
Yeah, so I think some of the patches, well, he may be working on his in a private repository on that, but I think some of the patches have gone out already to Iced Tea anyway. So that's one thing we may have to look at is making Gary a member of the porters group.
Yeah.
I don't know if he is already or
we'll have to turn it sort of zero porting project there, I guess.
Yeah, or even turning Iced Tea into into some sort of project or I guess it wouldn't be a project.
It would be project as part of Porter's group, for example. But
Or we could make an Iced Tea group or something. These are things I was thinking about during Mark's presentation yesterday because
we have lots of groups and projects and structure for you.
That's right. And the Iced Tea project has kind of been operating outside of all those structures.
Yeah. And that's what we have to fix.
Right.
Okay, I'm looking forward to fixing all this together with you, Tom. You hang out on the #OpenJDK IRC channel as well. What's your nickname again?
Fitsim.
Excellent meeting you, Fitsim, and see you on IRC.
You for the first time, yes.
Sorry. Yeah.
All right.
I had a great time talking to Tom during Java 1 about Iced Tea and OpenJDK and all that. Since we recorded this podcast in May, Iced Tea has actually passed the Java 6 TCK on Fedora 9 on the x86 and AMD64 CPU architectures. That means that there is a fully free software and fully compatible Java implementation shipping in a recent Linux distribution as part of their main repository. So congratulations to the Red Hat team on Iced Tea, hackers, and to everybody else who was involved in making all this possible. This is a great achievement. And if you are interested in sending me feedback on all that, email me dalibor.topic@sun.com. And I'd love to hear back from you about what you think would be good ideas for interviews for this podcast. And of course, if you're a podcast yourself, what you reckon I should be doing, better or worse. And I hope to have you guys listening next week when I'll be having Mark Reinhold on the show to talk about OpenJDK governance and all that stuff. Okay, that's all for me. Bye for today. This was the OpenJDK Podcast Season 1, Episode 1.